This week, Pope Francis is on a six-day visit to the Democratic Republic of Congo and South Sudan. What's the pontiff's message to these countries grappling with conflict? We'll hear from the Vatican and examine the relevance and influence of the Catholic Church across Africa today. Also, we'll bring you an interview with the EU Special Representative for the Sahel, Emmanuela Del Rey. We'll discuss our visit to Washington and the future of the G5 Sahel Joint Force. Straight Talk Africa starts right now. Hello and welcome. I'm Vincent McCorry in for Haiti Adams. Pope Francis is on a six-day tour to two African nations where he hopes to highlight the human cost of decades of conflict. The pontiff arrived Tuesday in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Following his visit to the DRC, he will then travel to South Sudan. Both countries are being ravaged by conflict and instability. This is Pope Francis's fifth visit to the continent. Africa has the fastest growing Catholic population in the world. The church's following is projected to reach 350 million by 2050, according to the Washington Post. The church's European population has been receding for years. So what is the backstory for the Pope's visit to the DRC and South Sudan? And what is this papal visit meant to accomplish? Well, for more, I'm joined now by John Tanza, Managing Editor of VOA South Sudan in Focus. And from the Vatican City, we are joined by Father Paul Samasumo, Head of English Africa Service at the Vatican Radio and Vatican News, and World Vice President of CINIS, an International Association of Catholic Media Professionals. Gentlemen, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. And I want to start with you, Father Samasumo. Why, in your assessment, did the Pope select those countries, start with DRC?
Thank you for having me. In the first place, Pope Francis has always wanted to go to the DRC and to South Sudan. He has not made a secret about it. He has always been talking and following the events that have been happening. He has met with the Congolese community here in Rome, those who live in Italy, and it's something that has been close to his heart. If you know Pope Francis's mission since he became Pope in 2013, you realize that he is always close to those that are suffering, to the periphery, the neglected. So choosing the Democratic Republic of Congo and South Sudan did not come as an accident, as very much know the story of the eastern region of the Democratic Republic, which is bedeviled by all sorts of gangs and militias that are causing a big amount of suffering to the people there and displacing literally thousands upon thousands.
Yes. Now, John, the Pope is expected in South Sudan on Friday this week. What are people on the ground saying? What does this trip mean to them?
I mean, people on the ground in South Sudan are excited that Pope Francis is visiting the country, and most of the people who spoke to us said it means South Sudan will be back. The attention of the world will be back to South Sudan because, I mean, since the 2018 peace agreement, it appears like the international community is fed up with what is going on in the country, and nothing is on the agenda as far as South Sudan is concerned. When people talk about issues around the world, South Sudan is not appearing anywhere, and they think the Pope is going to put South Sudan back to the world map and the desired attention for, getting an end to that conflict will be reignited.
Yes. Now, Father Samasumo, some indeed have called the conflicts in South Sudan, the DRC, as the forgotten kind of conflicts. Although for those of us who cover it all the time, we don't see it as, something that we can afford to forget. Now, what can the Pope's visit, for example, the DRC that is ravaged by fighting, especially in the East, what can it achieve in terms of the Catholic leadership and the people in the country?
Well, actually, the Pope yesterday diverting, when he first arrived at the at the Palace of the Democratic Republic there, the Playas del Nacion. He spoke, he even actually went off script and described what is happening in the Democratic Republic of Congo as the forgotten genocide. Very strong words indeed. And we heard him use language which I must say he rarely uses. He was actually very, very strong in his words. Hands off the Democratic Republic of Congo. Hands off Africa. The Congo Democratic Republic of Congo is not there to be stripped of its terrain. Africa is not there to be stripped of its terrain. So it is that kind of messaging, I think, that Pope Francis, right now, the spotlight of the international media is on the DRC and will be in a few days' time on South Sudan. Yes, yourselves and ourselves, we are always covering South Sudan, but by and large, these two countries do not feature prominently on the international news agenda. If you compare, for example, what is happening to Ukraine.
Yeah, and before I come to you, John, Father Semisumo, indeed very, very strong words from the Pope there in the DRC. He said what he's witnessing there is economic enslavement, and he said, of course, hands off. Who is he talking to?
He was very clear again. He's speaking to Western countries, those who sponsor these kinds of militias. He's speaking to African countries, and also he was addressing himself to the multinationals. Everybody who is sponsoring any of these militias, who is in any way facilitating this kind of conflict there, I think those are the people he was addressing in his speech yesterday when he spoke to civil society, government authorities and other political leaders there, as well as the diplomatic corps that came to listen to him in his keynote address when he arrived in the DRC.
Yes, and John, you know, when you think about the Catholic population in South Sudan, for example, an upward of 2.5, you imagine that both sides of the political divide, you're finding Catholics. So, in essence, Catholics feuding against Catholics. So what, from what you hear, can the Pope do in his messaging in South Sudan to help these people see the commonality, the common denominator, which is actually especially their faith in order to address the conflict in South Sudan?
I mean, the leadership in South Sudan are made up of all these denominations. President Kiri is a staunch Catholic. He goes to church every Sunday. And people are really, really, really crying, saying Pope Francis should speak to President Salva Kiir, Riek Machar, and the other leaders of the groups to sit down and bring an end to the conflict. Mm-hmm. People are suffering. People are not being able to build their lives. So the overriding message that we are getting from people is an appeal for an end to crisis in South Sudan. You remember April 2019, First Vice President Riek Machar and President Kiir were at Vatican with the other leaders. And the Pope humbled himself and kissed their feet. People are saying when they returned from Vatican, Pope Francis told them, please go and put an end to the crisis in your country. Yeah. That has not happened.
Pretty much, it's like saying apply what you learn when you go to church. I mean, you're talking about love, peace, forgiveness, understanding, but then it must be frustrating to see the Pope, for the Pope to see this continuing.
It is. And not only the Pope. Everybody is frustrated because what is happening in South Sudan could be prevented, can be prevented, if the leaders of the various groups sit down and reconcile and forgive each other. There will be stability in that country, and that translates to development, that mm-hmm. translates to provision of services. It translates to, you know, South Sudan getting its right place in the international community, being yeah. respected.
Yeah. And Father Semisumo, you know, we're still on this theme of peace. That is the message that the Pope is taking to this country. As you talk about DRC, wow, over 50 million Catholics. So in my assessment, many of the people even in those conflicts are also people of the same faith, they're people probably who would attend the same church. To what extent is the Bible message, the message of love, forgiveness, peace really penetrating through the hearts of the people of the region? And how can the Pope use that podium to help people come together and resolve their problems?
This is not only unique to Africa, to the Democratic Republic of Congo, to South Sudan. It is a universal problem. As you know, we have Catholics in the United States. Some of them do crazy things. We have Catholics in Africa who do crazy things and so forth. So it's a problem of human nature. And the Holy Father, Pope Francis, does not have an army, does not have a big stick with which he can wield, but he can appeal. As John said earlier on, when he invited these leaders of South Sudan to come to the Vatican and appealed, the Pope can keep appealing. And he has done the same. What he has done, he has invited the Anglican Archbishop of Canterbury, John Welby, as well as the moderator of the Presbyterian Church in Scotland. They are going with him. They are accompanying with him. Because I think exactly what your question says, these are our Christians. These are the people who come to our churches. So the three of them are going to be in South Sudan, and they're going to be appealing to their faithful, so to say. Mm-hmm. And this is what he's doing also in the Democratic Republic of Congo, when he said yesterday in his speech, and repeated himself today at the mass that he presided over in the DRC in Kinshasa.
Okay. And John, I think it's unique that in South Sudan, indeed, he's coming with the Bishop of Canterbury. That's supposed to at least bring two different faiths together, right?
Yes, and I can tell you, at the presidency, Vice President Rebecca Nyandeng is an Anglican.
Yeah.
Riek Machar is from the Presbyterian Church. President Kiir is from the Catholic Church. Yeah. So the coming of the three leaders is going to, if you like, impact on these leaders.
Yeah.
And hopefully they will listen to him and bring an end to the crisis. Mm-hmm. One thing I forgot is some people are also urging Pope Francis to speak to these leaders to give freedom of press mm-hmm. in South Sudan, because as it is now, even covering the coming of the Pope is a challenge to many journalists. Not a lot of them got accreditation, and they are really complaining. And so there is a call for press freedom. Amnesty International just released a statement today calling on Pope Francis to remind the leaders of Democratic Republic of Congo and South Sudan to address issues to do with human rights abuses.
Let's hope
if you allow
can
me
see
to jump in, I just want to say that this kind of cooperation has been happening already in the Democratic Republic of Congo and in South Sudan. The churches have already been meeting. They have the South Sudanese Christian Conference there, which has been meeting. So it is something that's on the grassroots, and it's now escalated to the bigger and wider platform of these leaders. Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll be watching to see where this leads. This was John Tanza and Father Paul Samasumo. Thank you both for your time.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Well, coming up on Straight Talk Africa, we have an interview with the European Union Special Representative for the Sahel, Emmanuela Del Rey, and we'll discuss the re-engagement of the United States with Africa. Don't go away. We'll be right back after the break.
Medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
The AU Special Representative for the Sahel, Emmanuela Del Rey, was in Washington last week for talks with officials of the United States on the EU-US partnership in the Sahel. What message from Washington is she taking back to Brussels? Via French service journalist Idrissa Fall spoke to her.
Very good outcome, because I have to say that the United States, for me, are an important actor, especially for the Sahel, because they have decided to be very engaged in the region. They confirm that they recognize the importance of acting on development, for instance, investing millions of dollars. They want to be by the side of the population of the Sahel, and I think it's very important for the Sahelians to have the opportunity to count on a country like the United States. For the European Union, of course, this is also good news, because we are very much engaged. We are actually the main partner of the countries of the Sahel, and as you know, the European Union is formed by 27 member states, which means that we are a critical mass, very significant for the Sahel.
Okay, news for good governance, because you tend to address the youth where all those jihadist groups hire their militants. So what is the strategy of the European Union?
The European Union, in its integrated strategy for the Sahel, has identified governance as, let's say, the most important political principle, meaning that if we have good governance, access to basic services, such as education, but also electricity, for instance, and other basic services which are absolutely fundamental, we can change the society from within for the benefit of the Sahelians, because the Sahelians want us to help them in this process. Of course, governance is related to also constitutional order. This is why we hope that the transitions in the region will come to a conclusion, and there will be elections, and there will be proper democratic societies everywhere. And of course, we are also investing a lot in development and humanitarian aid, because unfortunately humanitarian aid is necessary given the very deep crisis, for instance the millions of IDPs and refugees, the food crisis, and all the very desperate situations that we find in the region.
My last question about military fight against terrorism. France is leaving Burkina Faso and Mali. The G5 Sahel, Mali pull out of it. So how would you think a fight, military fight against terrorism?
I have to say that it depends on each country of the Sahel. The situation is not everywhere the same. For instance, Niger is reorganizing itself in a very structured way with the army, and also with the support of the European Union, because they have clearly demonstrated that they want the support of the European Union. And there will be a reorganization of the military presence in cooperation with the local military. Of course, because this is the most important thing for the European Union. Ownership is the inspiring principle. Regarding the other countries, there are problems. For instance, you know that in Mali there were two coup d'etat, in Burkina Faso as well. Mali pulled out of the G5, that is true, but it's also true that the regional dimension continues, and the G5, it is true that it's now composed of four members, but these four members are thinking of how to keep the five together. I don't think that we have to concentrate on the name, the G5, but certainly the fact that they share the same problems, and borders are in common, and all the issues are transversal, is something that we have to take into consideration. Therefore, provided that Mali understands the very big mistake, I have to be honest, that it made by calling the Wagner Group, which is a group of mercenaries, expression of Russia, which is at the moment for the European Union and for the global order a very big threat. And Burkina makes its own decisions, considering that it is a very important country and also a very significant country at political level. And Burkina decides to make the right choices with us and with like-minded countries, considering that we are the main partner, and I would say their natural partner. In that case, I see that there would be an opportunity for the future, and especially a good future for the countries of the Sahel.
Well, thank you, Idrissa. The White House is pushing for a re-engagement with Africa on a lot of fronts. Secretary of State Antony Blinken recently visited the continent, followed by U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen and the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield. To help us understand what this all means, let's go to Franny Lotier, Senior Partner and CEO of Southbridge Investments, who is visiting Washington from Kinshasa. And if I mispronounce your name, please correct me. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you very much. You pronounce it perfectly. It's a great pleasure.
All right. So let's look at all these trips that have taken place recently. How are they being viewed on the continent especially?
Well, first of all, I think it's the level of who has come and who has come. If you start with the level, I think it's the first time that a series of high-level U.S. officials have come to Africa in quite a while, and that has been noticed, and people have been commenting about it. But also when you look at who has come, let me start first with Ambassador Thomas Greenfield, because she is the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations. That shows the significance of the global issues that the United States wants to address with Africa. They go all the way from fragile states and conflict. You just had this segment with the visit of the Pope and the discussion you had with the European Union delegation for the Sahel. So critically, the fragile states and the ability for them to actually deliver on climate objectives, because those tend to also be the very difficult zones, the arid zones in the Sahel, the importance of food security in those areas, and then, of course, the importance of stability in general for economic development. Mm-hmm. And that brings me to then Secretary Yellen, because she represents the financial sector and the economic policy world, both macroeconomic policy, but also global policy on global public goods. So that has also been a very strong observation that this is an important area for Africa's economic development, but maybe also for the role that Africa can play globally to support the rest of the world, jointly working with the United States and other partners on climate risks, on risks around food security, and then, of course, on the very challenging issues of the energy transition. And then Secretary Blinken, because of the importance of diplomacy.
Yeah, now, you know, some people we speak to on the continent say when they look around, they see so much evidence of the presence of China, for instance. They see roads, they see bridges, they see all sorts of forms of infrastructure. The question is, how different and unique is the U.S. strategy if you look at, for example, the officials who have just visited? How does it differ from that of China?
I think, first of all, something struck me in the words that are being used, and then, of course, we'll look at the actions. So for the words, I was very, my ears were wide open listening to two words in particular, that the U.S. is focused on Africa, and the U.S. is focused with Africa, and the U.S. is looking to work together with Africa. And I think this is quite different from previous engagements, which were really, I'll do this for you and you can do this for me, so let's exchange. And that togetherness and kind of common future, I think, makes a big difference going forward, because it looks like the push is for Africa as a partner for the future to address the challenges that the world is facing in the future, which would then be mutually beneficial for Africa and for the United States. The second one is, I think, the sectors of focus. And I was struck also by where the speeches were made. And Secretary Yellen went to talk to a center that represents women and youth entrepreneurs. So that's the backbone of Africa's economy, the small and medium enterprises, women and young people who have previously been excluded from the economy but now are coming back in with great creative ideas. And it leads then to the third key piece, which is innovation, because the young creative minds in Africa can work very, very strongly with creative minds in the United States to develop new technologies and to exploit new technologies, whether it's in energy and energy transition, the mm-hmm. clean transport solutions, or areas relating to measuring and tracking using satellite data and other areas, for instance, if you want to see carbon sequestration yeah. in the forests of Africa and so on.
And you know, it's interesting when you talk about engagement, mostly when you look at the youth of Africa today with technology, they're becoming very plugged into the global trends, and so many of them have even come to Washington, for instance, to present some of their startups. So has the strategy in terms of, from the African perspective, changed, where the continent is not just seen as a place that is waiting to receive, but rather to engage and also has something to offer? And is that coming out from at least the position of the leadership on the continent?
I think both from the leadership, but also from the young people themselves. When you walk around Africa, and almost in any country in Africa today, you would hear young people talking very optimistically about the future. Why? Because Africa is home to 60 to 70% of the rare earths that are needed for the low carbon transition, and therefore can provide, is already providing the raw material for that transition, but can also provide the solutions or the technology space if you can bring these creative ideas from the youth. And the startups that came to Washington during the US-Africa summit are just one example of that. The second reason people are optimistic is that on the creative side of what young people do, there's also a very strong demand from the rest of the world, and particularly from the United States. There's a young woman from Kenya who started to make running shoes because Kenyans are very good runners, and it ended up that her biggest demand for those running shoes are from the United States. So she's now setting up a factory in the United States. You see the same thing in music, in fashion, in the food sector. We had this big conference on food security in Dakar that just ended with a large number of African heads of state. And Africa is leading the way in healthy eating because nuts, tubers, and grains are the basic food to get a healthy, long life. And Africa produces those in large quantities, so agricultural productivity can just boost that even more. So I think programs like Prosper Africa, thinking again of a future for trade between Africa and the United States, because AGOA is coming to an end. How do we bring all those together so that investment can accompany trade and support these young businesses in Africa that are so dynamic and creative to do even more?
Yeah. Now, you know, some see, when they see China's involvement, they see Russia, they feel like there is a contest here. But all these powers have said, no, we're not necessarily competing with each other. Each of us is engaging separately and differently. Can Africa engage with all this in the most beneficial way to the continent and in the most sustainable way? Or must one elbow out the others in order for the continent to have a more meaningful engagement?
I think things have changed quite a bit in terms of economic planning and prioritization across many countries in Africa. Today, there's strong leadership in the ministries of finance, in the development boards that many countries have created, for example, the Rwanda Development Board, and you see the same in Senegal, in Tanzania, and in other places where you have investment centers that welcome investors and have a strategic plan to engage investors. So I think Africa is prepared now to work with partners with different ideas and bringing different perspectives for the success of the future of the world and the future of Africa. So it's going to be really a question of who has the best to offer in terms of technology, in terms of partnership in investment and trade. And there I see clear areas of opportunity. So for example, ideas in liquidity in the market, requires...
And I know there's a lot we can discuss, but we will leave it right here. I want to thank you very much, Franny, for your insight. Franny Lotier is Senior Partner and CEO of Southbridge Investments. Well, and that's our show for today. Don't forget to visit our website, voaafrica.com, and also follow us on Twitter at VOA Story Talk Africa. And that's it. Have a good day.